Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And here we are on the cusp of another January 6th, upcoming soon as we go to air today. January 6th is tomorrow, when Donald Trump's election is scheduled to be certified at the Congress and become official. In unrelated news, a mystery disease outbreak in China is reportedly overwhelming hospitals. That's right. China is reporting, this is according to the Daily Mail over in the United Kingdom. China is reportedly being ravaged by a mysterious viral outbreak that is overwhelming some hospitals. Now, did you notice the slight disagreement in the verbiage there? It says China is reportedly being ravaged by a viral outbreak that is overwhelming some. It's either reported or it is. It's not both. But the Daily Mail doesn't know which it is, but they know that they're scheduled to start broadcasting the viral outbreak now. Why? Because in unrelated news, Donald J. Trump's election is scheduled to be certified on Monday, January 6th. And so the Daily Mail reports today, Sunday, videos on social media appear to show hospital units overrun with patients in face masks and parents holding sick children in long lines at hospitals. There have also been unverified reports. Are you sitting down? There have also been unverified reports that crematoriums and funeral homes are being overwhelmed, with videos soon to be circulating on social media. I'm just reporting the news. I know, that's never, there's no way they're going to try that again. That would be too childish. There's just no way. Meanwhile, the Federalist reports. The Federalist, I said, the People's Republic of China is undertaking an unprecedented military buildup, not unlike the Nazi Germany buildup in the 1930s. Now, this is the Federalist. I don't know. I haven't been watching. I haven't been following China's military buildup. I don't have access to the files and the. So I don't know, is this a story planted by the military-industrial complex to spur spending so that we'll buy more missiles and rockets and bombs and be scared of China? Well, it could be. And it could be that China is getting ready to make their move, possibly even before Donald J. Trump is sworn into office. I know, that's insane, right, to think that anything like that could possibly happen. Remember when Joe Biden, the election was stolen for Joe Biden? And I said there's a vacuum in the political structure of the world, and that's not going to end well. Well, it's about to end. The vacuum, I mean. Well, supposedly. So the Federalist goes on that this military buildup is part of a broader strategy. China wants to position itself as a global superpower. Do you think so? I think so. Who doesn't want to establish themselves as a global superpower? Of course the Chinese want to establish themselves as a global superpower. Meanwhile, the U.S., having spent over $5 trillion on the war on terror, we find ourselves strategically vulnerable. Do you think maybe 20 years of outrageously stupid war? Not that the war itself was stupid. The 20 years was stupid. 2 years, maybe, to wipe out a bunch of raghead. I shouldn't say it that way. To wipe out a bunch of 7th century backwards, barefoot. 2 years tops. But 20 years, okay, so we're... the Federalist goes on, beyond its conventional forces, China's adoption of cognitive warfare focuses on manipulating information to erode trust in U.S. leadership via tools such as social media and TikTok. Sun Tzu would approve. Did I mention that videos are circulating on social media out of China that there's a viral outbreak that's overwhelming hospitals and possibly crematoriums and possibly even the graveyards in China are being overrun by people trying to bury people. But you have to stand in line to get into the grave. They'll have those videos, 35-second videos on TikTok of people who can't bury the dead. In China, a cognitive warfare. So color me, yeah, I think maybe possibly China is on the verge of, well, something nefarious, that's all. And by the way, I'm not against, so people get upset with me that I'm not suspicious enough of the military-industrial complex. Trust me, I am suspicious. I worked in it. I remember. It's mostly bamboozlement and smoke and mirrors, like just about everything else on Earth. And I'm against endless foolish wars is what I'm against. I'm not against an endless state of military political influence, both overt and covert, by the American government. That I'm not against. I'm not against that. Military, political, we have to be on a constant state of war. Now, it doesn't have to always be kinetic, physical warfare, violent warfare. It could be political, overt, covert, but we have to be always up to that. And if we're not, Sun Tzu would be telling us we need to be. And we're about to be thrust up against a bunch of people who read Sun Tzu's book. And I don't think anyone in the United States government has read Sun Tzu's book in a generation. So anyway, meanwhile, here's what's actually happening on the ground with the governing officials in America. A California councilwoman finds herself to be the fiancé of a Chinese spy. A spy of the Chinese regime. His name is Mike Sun Tzu. No, not Tzu. I added that. But his name is actually Mike Sun. He worked with a recently sentenced Chinese agent, which means a spy, in Los Angeles. The two worked closely for many years. The Chinese agent, Chen Jun, is telling officials that Sun, the council... So this Chinese agent was writing back to his Chinese handlers back in the intelligence apparatus in China that the councilwoman is part of a basic team dedicated for us. She on our side. He's talking about a councilwoman in Los Angeles. Is she for us? Sun is a former Chinese army member and was the campaign manager of Eileen Wang. That's her name. Eileen Wang won the city council seat for Arcadia in Los Angeles County for the People's Republic of China. It's just embarrassing. It's happening right in front of God and everybody, and nobody will say anything because it would be racist. She's a woman, and she's a minority. She struggled her entire career as a woman in a minority to attack her as a Chinese spy just because she's about to marry a Chinese spy is racist. You're a horrible person to think that way. Meanwhile, listen to this. I'm not making this up. This is from redstate.com. Which is a vulgar, leftover stench left in the air after the conservatives left the room. Perhaps there's a better way to put it. What is redstate.com? Redstate.com is demonstrative of the stench that's left of the conservative movement after all the actual conservatives left the room. And they report that Lindy Lee, former Democrat National Committee fundraiser and prostitute for the Democrat Party, she has now been appointed to the Trump Vance Inaugural Committee. She had a right back to my handle in China. Trump and Vance, they good for us. I'm sorry, I slipped into my unintelligible Chinese accent there for a moment. You may remember Lindy Lee. She was a top fundraiser for the Democrat National Committee up until about 5 minutes ago. She got upset because they lost, and her funds started drying up. So she's gone from the top fundraiser for the resistance to raising money now for Donald Trump. And redstate.com writes, quote, "The transformation appears to be complete," unquote. Appears to be being the operative phrase there. Lindy Lee says, "I'm done with them," talking about the Democrat Party. Did I say potty? The Democrat potty. She said the party, they now calling for me. I'm an American. They call for me to be deported. They want me to be deported just because I tell the truth. Because they loser. Democrats have exposed their racism now for all to see. Everybody can see now they're a bunch of racists. But it was always simmering beneath the surface. That was always the racism.
That's Mike Tyson.
That's Mike Tyson? He's not Chinese. So Lindy Lee, and I've never heard her speak. I'm just going on my suspicions. Lindy Lee, she says the Democrats are now exposed as the racists they've always been. It was always just simmering beneath the surface, but she apparently ignored all that racism while the money was really good.
I ignored the racism because, you know, the money was really great.
But now that the money has completely dried up and Lindy Lee finds herself being hated by people who she bamboozled out of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, while she lied to them about everything, and now they're like, Lindy, you're telling me that we were trying to back this brain-dead puppet and this vacuous alcoholic? Lindy, why wouldn't you? So now she's jumped ship over to Trump. And so I just want to remind you, Donald Trump is known and famous for surrounding himself with the wrong people. Okay? It's well known. Huh? Chris Ray, anyone? Hello? Michael Cohen. Who's the New York? Rudy Giuliani. Hello. Elon Musk. All right. Well, anyway, I know you all have high hopes. I'm not so hopeful myself. But then again, I've been jaded for so long. All right. But let's see. Let's try to find some good news here. From the widespread suspicion file, the FDA has begun testing raw cow's milk and cheese in search of bird flu.
Okay, that's weird.
Anywhere they can find it. Next they'll be searching boxes of Legos. They'll all have to be tested along with children's bicycles. Federal health officials. So I read this. This is from ABC News. Federal health officials. What does that mean? Does anybody ever stop and ask, wait a second, what's a federal health official? ABC is not obligated to tell you what that is because they assume you're so stupid, you're just going to read right through it and assume they're talking about someone who has the right to tell you what to do. Why? Well, they're a federal health official. It's official. And they're at the federal level. Who am I to question them? They say they've begun collecting samples of aged raw cow's milk cheese to test for bird flu because, in an unrelated story, Donald Trump's election is set to be scheduled to be certified on Monday, January 6th. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. So the FDA has begun the testing. The testing started at the end of December and is expected to be completed. This is testing for bird flu in anything that moves. Testing expected to be completed by the end of March or whenever the masses are deemed gullible enough to participate in another pandemic hysteria. If needed, the agency will extend the collection period. If people are not deemed gullible enough, samples will be tested with a PCR test because that seemed to work the last time. And samples that test positive will be shot on TikTok videos and splashed across social media to terrify everyone. It's a positive sample! Oh no! The agency may issue actions such as recalls, and they may begin follow-up inspections and other possible responses in order to, quote, protect public health, unquote. All right. Meanwhile, Jimmy Carter died. So I started my career as an amateur comedian in 1977, impersonating Dan Aykroyd, impersonating Jimmy Carter. Okay. That's how I started my career as an amateur comedian. Ha, I'm Jimmy Carter. Does anyone remember Dan Aykroyd doing that? I used to stand up on the hump in the middle of the floor of the back seat of my dad's, whatever it was, giant car. Stand up on the hump in the middle where the drive shaft goes through to the back wheels, because they were all real rear wheel drive back then. Stand on that hump and I could see over the seat, and then I would impersonate Dan Aykroyd impersonating Jimmy Carter. Now, I didn't know I was impersonating Dan Aykroyd because I didn't know who Dan Aykroyd was. But that's how I had been exposed. Anyway, Jimmy Carter, this is from the Bad Religion file, reporting on Jimmy Carter's phony Baptist church in Plains, Georgia. I know everyone says don't speak ill of the dead, but that's because they're carnally minded and they don't understand that Jimmy Carter is not actually dead. He's merely changed locations. He's gone from dwelling here to dwelling elsewhere. And so I don't consider it a particularly momentous occasion that demands that we all lie about how we actually feel. Death is not an excuse for everyone to cover up the truth about how they actually feel. I never liked Jimmy Carter. I always thought he was a phony and a fake and a liar and a communist and a degenerate and a child murderer. And so just the fact that he changed locations from here to elsewhere and left his mortal body behind does not inspire me to now to start lying about Jimmy Carter and saying what a nice guy he is. Jimmy Carter had a fake Baptist church that he started soon after he became president. They had their first service, oddly enough, on May 22nd, 1977, just a few months after Jimmy was sworn in as the first Bible-clutching president, claiming he was a pure as the wind-driven snow Christian up against that evil Richard Nixon leftover Gerald Ford. Anyway, yeah, just 4 months after Jimmy's sworn in, Maranatha Baptist Church comes into being down there in Plains, Georgia, and for 40 years, Jimmy Carter taught Sunday school there. Oh. Oh, yeah. And he concluded each Sunday school lesson with a challenge for all in attendance to do one good thing for another person. I got to do my Jimmy Carter voice. I want to end this Bible study by reminding all of you to do one good thing for one person, like pay for an abortion for them or buy a Palestinian child some dynamite. Jimmy Carter. Let's see. In May of last year, at the church, the fake church that former President Jimmy Carter taught fake Sunday school at, they named their first phony baloney female pastor, Reverend Ashley Guthos. That was May of last year, 2023. The first female pastor, she says, well, who cares what she says? She issued a statement saying, It took her many years to get over the theological views that in her mind had insisted women should not be pastors. But then she was bamboozled by Jimmy Carter into thinking she should be a pastor because Jimmy Carter picked her. And so she set aside her theological concerns and defiled the pulpit there at the fake a phony Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia. And so that was now in 2019, Jimmy Carter actually picked the first African-American pastor who unfortunately happened to be a male. But, you know, Jimmy was checking the black guy box. He wasn't checking the woman box at that point. And so, by the way, it was still politically correct to appoint a man who identified as a man as your pastor, and so that's why Jimmy did that. Had it not been politically correct, Jimmy would have picked a transgendered African-American Asian female who identifies as... He would have done that because that's who Jimmy Carter was. Now, the black guy who got picked, he said at the time, "Surely President Carter can get anyone he wants. I am just beside myself and humbled that Jimmy Carter would pick me to be the pastor of his fine Maranatha Baptist Church." That was James Loudon. And so nobody asked, and nobody has asked, but I'm going to ask, since when does a guy who teaches Sunday school pick the pastor of the church? Uh-huh. Oh, it's when it's his fake phony church that he set up. Is that it? Uh-huh. That's it. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's when the Sunday school teacher gets to pick all the pastors for 40 straight years. Okay. Meanwhile, we have a statement from Donald Trump about Jimmy Carter's unfortunate passing. Having served, Donald Trump, I tell you what, you got to give it to Donald Trump. He doesn't try to hide his narcissism at all. He opens his statement on the death of Jimmy Carter. Now, he mentions Jimmy Carter's death, which is the only thing he's going to mention about Jimmy for the next 15 sentences, because he's going to talk about himself. He said, after mentioning the fact that Jimmy's dead, Donald says, "Those of us..." I need to develop a Donald Trump impersonation. I can't believe I haven't taken the time. As an amateur comedian, you'd think that I would dedicate the time necessary to work out a good Donald Trump impersonation. The thing is I can't stand to listen to the guy talk. It drives me crazy because if you listen to Donald Trump for more than a few minutes, you realize that he's not that smart. And his mastery of the English language isn't all that impressive. And then you realize that everyone around him is impressed, and it's terrifying to think that people are this stupid, that this guy impresses them that much. And so it's dispiriting to watch Donald Trump speak and to watch other people get all weak in the knees about him. I can't do it. It's been very difficult. And so I haven't worked up a good Donald Trump impersonation. But Donald Trump says of Jimmy Carter's death, Those of us who have been fortunate enough to serve as presidents understand that this is a very exclusive club. Only we who have served can relate to the enormous blah, 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 blah. It's about me. And yes, I understand Jimmy, but it's what a narcissist. Just unbelievable. Anyway, he closes by saying, Melania and I are thinking warmly of the Carter family and all of the abortions and the public displays of sodomy that we agreed upon. But most of all, I'm thinking about how this strong Christian, but a Democrat, Jimmy, he's dead. While me, a philandering nominal Episcopalian, I've been saved by God and chosen, saved by a bullet from God, by the way, and chosen to be president. You've got to admit things are looking pretty good for me, right? And for Jimmy, not so much. That's Donald Trump's statement on the passing of of President Carter. So from there we go to justthenews.com reports just today. Donald Trump taps Tranny Bruce for State Department spokesperson. That's right. I meant Tammy Bruce. I'm sorry. Or is that Tommy Bruce? Didn't we have a name for this guy on the show? I've forgotten it now. Bruce. Just Bruce. That's right. Anyway, I read the headline, Tranny Bruce, because that's the way it struck me. And I know that Bruce is not a tranny. Tammy Bruce is the most unlistenable voice ever on the radio. So back when I used to listen to so-called alleged conservative radio, Tammy Bruce would be the guest host for various hosts who were taking time off. And just the most unlistenable voice on radio. And so naturally she got her own show, once Michael Medved got a show, it was pretty much like, I mean, come on. Yeah. Can we deny anybody their own show on syndicated radio and the alleged, as long as they'll avoid certain topics? Or, you know, as long as they'll only address certain topics a certain way so as not to offend the powers that be in the radio business. Can we really deny anyone a show? I mean, once you give a show to Hugh Hewitt, you've pretty much... there are no standards anymore. Even Tammy Bruce with the unlistenable voice could get a... Oh, no, now it's quite possible that Donald Trump could appoint Hugh Hewitt to something. More than likely, he will. Hugh Hewitt's out. He walked off MSNBC. He finally couldn't take it anymore. Or was it CNN? I forget. He was working for one of the... Anyway, we have a quote from Trump on Tranny Bruce. Tammy is a highly respected political analyst who understood the power and importance of MAGA early on. After being a liberal activist in the 1990s, not so much unlike myself, Donald Trump, by the way. Tranny saw that the lies and the fraud of the radical left, not the left like me and Melania and Jimmy, but the radical left. Seeing their lies, Tranny quickly became one of the strongest conservative voices on the radio and television. And don't think I haven't paid attention to radio and television. That's all I consume all the time. This way. All right. By the way, Tammy Bruce received a bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Southern California, which should disqualify her for any job above the level of cashier at the DMV. It's the Weekly Worldview. And I am your host, Doug McBurney, going now from the latest media-related appointment at the Trump administration. We go from there to the criminally insane file where we check in with Todd Starnes, who is a Republican MAGA hack. One of the reasons I stopped paying attention to alleged conservative media is Todd Starnes. Every 15 or 20 articles, he'll write something that's legitimately interesting and true. But the rest of it is just pure Republican MAGA propaganda. And here we go. His headline screams, "Preschool defends teaching three-year-olds transgender lesson." That's the screaming headline designed to get all of the MAGA people to click, because we're all incensed by this. This is the radical left, not the left with the abortions and the stuff we all agree that should be, you know, that's all negotiable with the abortions and the gays. We don't mind the gays. We just hired the what's her name? Bruce. We don't mind the gays. I might appoint Bruce Jenner to something about sports. Todd Starnes says that children at a New York City preschool were victimized by a substitute teacher who read a book, a storybook. And whenever you have transgendered people, by the way, the church, the teacher, did I say church? Yeah, that's embarrassing. At this, the pastor at this particular church turned out to be a transgender substitute teacher reading children's storybooks. So whenever you have someone who identifies as transgender reading a storybook to children, I mean, that's great clickbait for the MAGA crowd, but it's also a criminal offense. I just want to remind you people that having a sex pervert read a dirty book to children, somebody should be arrested, and it shouldn't be any of the children. But anyway, let's go on with the story as reported by Todd Starnes. New Yorkers have sounded off about this. They say, this is the preschool grooming innocent children, darn it. "It's absolutely sickening," one parent wrote on social media. Another parent wrote, "This is inappropriate and groomy." Groomy? Groomy? What do you mean groomy? Have we come up with an adjective for this criminal offense that now papers it over as if it's comical? Because that's what that sounds like to me. It sounds like that you talk about this kind of stuff regularly and that you've become tolerant of it to the point where you kind of make it a joke. This is groomy. That's so like groomy. That's disturbing to me. Todd Starnes goes on after not commenting on the fact that this parent said groomy, which is disturbing. Todd Starnes goes on, instead of apologizing and promising never to groom, which is what Todd thinks the school should do, Todd thinks the school should apologize and promise never to groom, or I guess to stop grooming, because they can't promise never to groom because they already groomed. Todd says they should promise never to groom children. But instead of apologizing and promising, the preschool doubled down and defended the teacher and the lesson. We have a statement from spokesperson Jennifer at New York City Schools. She says, "We are deeply committed to fostering an environment where children can grow, learn, and explore in a manner that is both age-appropriate and respectful of diverse perspectives." That's what the spokesperson. But parents say they should have been notified so they could opt their children out of the grooming. Could you notify us of the grooming so we can opt our children out? New York City Public Schools then issued a statement because nobody wanted to get up on behind a lectern and take questions. So they just issued a statement saying, "New York City Public Schools greatly values the use of age-appropriate, diverse, and inclusive educational materials." that promote language development, social emotional growth, and foundational literacy skills. We are currently engaging with this specific program to understand how the material was introduced and whether it adhered to the recommended guidelines. Unquote. That's the... And then, so the whole article goes, Todd Starnes never calls it a crime and allows people to joke about groominess and grooming and opt out of grooming. Are you people all insane? Todd Starnes doesn't recognize that this is a criminal act being perpetrated by perverts against children, and he's the conservative. Okay, that's from the criminally insane file, which I think Todd Starnes qualifies as now. It's criminally insane. And now, an update, I guess, of sorts. This is a story that brought to my mind how it is we might have all gotten here, where it's now okay for conservatives to link arms with perverts in order to achieve greatness. Because there was a time, you see, when conservatives had standards by which we would not align ourselves with certain perverted, corrupt, evil wickedness because of the perverted, corrupt, evil wickedness. Because we recognize that there was perverted, corrupt, evil wickedness that one should never align oneself with in order to achieve an end, because it wasn't worth aligning oneself with evil. But that all crumbled, and here's how I think it happened, or at least this was a big part of it. The New York Post is reporting that it, coming up on January 7th, will be the 10-year anniversary of the Charlie Hebdo massacre in France. That's right. You remember when jihadist gunmen went into the Charlie Hebdo office there in Paris and shot dead 8 staff members of the atheist comic book. Now, the Muslim terrorists shot them dead because they had been making fun of Mohammed. And so now, on the 10th anniversary of the massacre, the magazine, the atheist publication, is using the 10th anniversary to send a message with a special God-mocking edition, including a competition to draw the funniest and meanest depiction of God, unquote. The publisher at Charlie Hebdo says, quote, this edition is intended for everyone who is fed up with living in a society directed by God and religion. Everyone who is fed up with the so-called good and the evil. Everyone who is fed up with religious leaders dictating our lives. And so we will mock God in public on the anniversary. Emmanuel Macron and the mayor of Paris intend to attend a celebration of the mocking of God on the anniversary of the massacre. The attack, according to the New York Post, fueled an outpouring of sympathy expressed and a wave of, do you remember? Je suis Charlie. Remember, I am Charlie, all the conservatives? So this to me was a milestone along the highway to hell, because everyone was compelled to stand with a bunch of perverts, a bunch of atheist, sex pervert, dirty comics, basically is what this is. And every conservative in the world had the Jesuits jolly pin on their lapel. And we at the Weekly Worldview, we said we are not Charlie. We're not standing with a bunch of sex perverts. It's these type of sex perverts who give the Muslims a reasonable argument against us. We should be standing against the sex perverts. Everyone at Charlie Hebdo should have been arrested and thrown in jail for all the perversion and corruption they introduce into the minds of civilized people. But no, 2015 and the Charlie Hebdo massacre marked the year the conservatives linked arms with the vulgar atheist perverts against the overtly maniacal assassins of Islam. And the devil will take that. The devil will take that as a win. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. As we come back from the Charlie Hebdo anniversary, we check in with the dim new world file, where we go to the U.S. Postal Service, where they will be raising shipping prices while keeping the cost of a first-class stamp unchanged.
Well,
that's right.
Just changed it.
They're going to jack up parcel select services by about 9%. 9%? That's not even close to inflation. Eggs are $8 a dozen, for crying out loud. Oh, inflation's 7%. Well, then how are eggs $8? Okay, but let's not get into all that. Let's start sounding like my dad. How can you pay more than $16 for a pair of jeans? That's crazy. Anyway, but eggs at $8, that was a little shocking to see that at the store. And I don't shop, I don't pay attention. I don't know how much things cost generally, but $8 for a dozen eggs struck me, that's all. But now the Postal Service, they're going to raise some rates, but they're going to keep the price of a stamp the same. The price adjustments were approved by the Postal Service Board of Governors and have been filed with the Postal Regulatory Commission for review, which is why things don't work at the post office. Because you got a Board of Governors submitting things to the Regulatory Commission, and then before you know it... Anyway, the rate changes are part of... I can't even say this without laughing. It's only because you want to cry. The agency's 10-year modernization plan called Delivering for America, a 10-year modernization plan to achieve financial sustainability. It's a $40 billion plan. And all the people involved don't know how ridiculous that sounds. You have a 10-year modernization plan, meaning by the time your modernization is complete, it'll be 10 years and it won't be modern anymore. Do you get that much? Anyway, it's a part of a $40 billion plan to sustainability, right? Oh, financial sustainability, which is a program that's been going on since, as far as I can remember, 1985. The Postal Service has been... It's had a 10-year plan to... It's like the Soviet Union, where they had a 5-year plan and then a 5-year plan. And when both of those failed, they came out with a 10-year plan. And everybody acted as if everything was going okay until the whole thing collapsed and fell apart in a moment. Anyway, Donald Trump should appoint Vladimir Putin to run the post office. Because then Vladimir Putin could have the illusion of running the Soviet Union... And he wouldn't have to blow anything up or poison anybody or go to war. And he could just sit there and... They say he wants the Soviet Union again. Give him the post office. All right. So from there, we go to reason number 1,452 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. I think the tranny school teacher, by the way, earlier, was I... So maybe I don't have that story. I can't pull it up. But anyway, I think that was reason number 1,400. But the trannies in the schools, that's one reason to keep your kids out. Here's another reason. Down in Texas, this is another report by Republican hack job Todd Starnes, who gins out the propaganda without any realization of how ridiculous what he's writing and saying comes off to genuine conservatives. He has no clue. He's reporting on school district superintendent Darryl told parents down there in Texas that he had ordered librarians to remove the good book. Which is a red flag, by the way, Todd. If you call the Bible the good book, you might be a phony, baloney, fake Christian. You might attend Jimmy Carter's fake, phony Baptist church down there in Georgia, or you might as well. Real Christians don't call the Bible the good book. Alcoholics and people in prison call the Bible the good book. But genuine Christians who actually know the Bible, we don't. He says, anyway, District Superintendent Darryl says we're going to have to remove the Bible to comply with the new state law that bars books with explicit and adult designated educational resources. That's right. The law passed by Republicans in Texas. So Republicans in Texas are so stupid and shallow that they passed a law to remove the dirty books from schools. So, I mean, without realizing that not arresting people who put dirty books in schools, that pretty much loses the war. But we're going to remove the dirty books from the school libraries because, well, that'll get us votes from the ignorant MAGA people out getting tattoos and going to Trump rallies. They'll vote for us because we're taking some of the dirty books out of the schools, but we're not going to mess with any of the dirty books that the parents getting the tattoos, sending their kids to school. We're not going to mess with their dirty books. We're going to take the really filthy ones out of the school libraries, though, for votes. Because we're shallow, hollow, empty, fake, phony, baloney, MAGA Republicans. So anyway, the idiot Republicans passed the law against dirty books. The school superintendent says that the Bible is a dirty book, which there are parts of the Bible that I remember not reading in front of my kids when they were little because it's kind of shocking. And so he said he's going to take the Bible out of the library. And so the parents were outraged. Parents and preachers showed up at the school board meeting to voice their extreme displeasure over the removal of the Bible by the smart aleck school superintendent. One parent said, "Look, we need security guards and bulletproof windows and doors at the school. I think having the Word of God available to our children can provide comfort and a sense of security in a chaotic world." Not realizing what she's saying sounds deranged. You're sending your kid into a place where you need bulletproof everything, but you want a Bible there so you can have a sense of security so that you can go down and get another tattoo. Do you realize how deranged you sound, Mom? Anyway, that's... And then another parent said, it seems absurd to me that the good book was thrown out with the bad books. Okay. Does that seem absurd to you? Mom, it sounds to me like Superintendent Darryl is just smarter than you are. And maybe Superintendent Darryl's actually read the Bible. And he realized he had you on a technicality because you're a bunch of idiots. Instead of saying that perverts will not be allowed to prey on children, it's a crime, and arresting the bastards, you try to take some of the dirty books that are too dirty for you to deal with. Do you realize? They don't realize. They're completely hapless. Anyway, another politician said the superintendent, that smart aleck, he may have violated the law. And then they started looking for laws. And then Todd Starnes says the letter from the politician left the superintendent sweating like a sinner in church. And after that come to Jesus board meeting, that smart aleck, Darryl, reinstated the Bible in the library. So strike one, Todd, was good book. Strike two, sweating like a sinner in church. And strike three, a come to Jesus meeting.
Is this guy not Christian?
Todd Starnes, you're not a Christian. I'm just going to give you the benefit of the doubt and assume that you're going straight to hell with jet rockets and your new MAGA tattoo, Todd. You need some help, buddy. You could call me anytime. I'd be happy to counsel with you. But as of right now, I fear for the destiny of your eternal soul. And also, I find your writing and your reporting abhorrent. Meanwhile, reason number 1,453 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Aubrey Van Landingham attends a government school in a well-to-do suburb of Austin, Texas. She's a cheerleader and president of the school's Future Farmers of America, as if there are any of those attending an upscale suburban Austin, Texas school. Please. Okay. Future Farmers of America. Okay. Anyway, she loved showing her pet goat at all the animal shows across the state for the FFA. And now she's facing up to 2 years in prison after being, if she's convicted of poisoning another girl's six-month-old goat, Willie. She poisoned the other girl's goat over a three-day period, eventually killing the poor goat. And then the teenager was asked by police why she did it. At first, she said she didn't do it. But then she said she did, and she said she did it because, quote, I don't like cheaters, unquote. Apparently accusing the other girl of cheating in a goat show, which, if I'm not mistaken, is not possible. How do you cheat at a goat show to make your goat win over another goat? So obviously the maniacal killer just has no remorse and is evil to the core. The other girl's goat beat her goat, and she thought the other girl cheated. Okay, well, that's like cheating at chess. You can't really cheat, that's all. Maybe you're evil. She injected the goat with pesticide, leaving the goat bellowing in pain and eventually dying in its 15-year-old owner's arms. Just horrible, awful. Willie died 21 hours after being first poisoned by the upscale cheerleader there at your child's government school. The goat killer has found an attorney, which is a test of shame for all lawyers. Will you take this case? How low can you go? Will you take the case of the admitted goat killer? Do you have no shame? And sure enough, they found one. And not only did the goat killer find a lawyer, the lawyer released the following statement. Now, the lawyer did not get up behind the lectern and offer to take questions. No. No, the lawyer has some shame. Or actually, has no shame, but has some limits to his ability to suspend disbelief. And he released the following statement. My minor client, did I mention my client's a minor? My minor client who killed the goat of another minor, who's not my client. My minor client and her family are working hard to resolve any legal issues and non-legal issues raised by these allegations. We are thankful for a judicial process that will let us tell our story. So the allegations, by the way, have been substantiated by the fact that your client confessed to killing the goat. So we already have your client's confession. So to call the allegations allegations is somewhat fallacious. But hey, we already know you have no shame. You took the case. So we would expect that. But do you expect us to believe that you're thankful to be able to tell this story in court? I mean, you might be a lawyer with no shame, but don't think you can pawn that off on us. We know the last thing you want to do is actually tell this story in court. In fact, if you can take this case to trial, you will be eligible to work as an attorney directly for the Antichrist during the Great Tribulation. That's, you will have passed the ultimate lowest lawyer test on the planet. All right, now let's get to two of the biggest stories from last week were the terrorist attacks, both apparently carried out by Army veterans. There's been every kind of conspiracy you can imagine spun up regarding the Tesla barbecue grill truck that blew up in front of Trump Tower there in Vegas. I mean, if you want to go down a rat hole, start looking into all the conspiracy theories spun out about this thing. And I've got a quote, a story from the New York Post. A U.S. soldier who blew up a Tesla Cybertruck, who everyone is like, was it a black op? Was it a false flag? Was it the Chinese? Was it the Democrat National Committee? Was it Linda Lee or Lindy Lee? What was her name? Was it her? Was it another communist asset? Was it the CIA? Was it the FBI? No. So if you want to go down a rat hole, you could spend 3 or 4 days going down all the stuff that have been spun up about this guy. Matthew Livelsberger, 37-year-old Army veteran. He left home the day after Christmas following an argument with his wife over accusations. I'm not going to get into it because you just never know who's telling the truth, who's lying about anything when two people are getting a divorce, which is what it looks like happened. Anyway, the guy's wife broke up with him 6 days before he detonated. Well, here the New York Post reports that he detonated explosives in the truck and shot himself in the head. Okay, so not necessarily in that order, apparently. Okay, but we don't know, which is why the story is so strange. For 2 days, every angle of all these conspiracy theories circulate, even to this morning. Anyway, but this makes more sense, okay? Just because a guy's a soldier or a Green Beret, it doesn't mean that he can't be driven mad by his own sin and failures, and those sins and failures of people right around him, like his wife. Killing in war is not so hard. And surviving is mostly luck. Ask anyone who's been there. But keeping a wife and child, that's the real test of a man. And this guy apparently failed. He failed and his wife failed at that fundamental task in life, and that drives people crazy. It takes the underlying tendency that we all have toward madness, and it just brings it to the surface in some bizarre way. And that's how this guy ends up, whatever else comes out about the guy. The reason he ended up in a position to be found in a blown up truck outside of Trump Tower is because he and his wife failed at the most fundamental thing in their life, and it drove them insane. And it's very sad. Meanwhile, out in New Orleans, I couldn't think of where this happened. Isn't that weird? I think I've got early stage dementia and or Alzheimer's. See, I couldn't even say that. And all Alzheimer's. I don't know what's going on. But we'll close with this story. The bollards were not in place at the time of the attack. That's right. Existing bollards, which are steel pillars filled with concrete that block traffic on streets, they've been installed along Bourbon Street. They were not in place at the time the terrorist drove his truck. Existing bollards along Bourbon Street were being removed and replaced, apparently mostly removed. The installation of the bollards was back in 2017, part of a $40 million safety plan, similar to the $40 billion plan over at the post office, supposed to enhance safety. Shortly after being installed, the bollards began to malfunction. How does that malfunction? Only the government could install a cylinder full of concrete that malfunctions, but apparently they did malfunction. What else do we have here? A New Orleans police quota hire superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick said that, the bollards didn't really matter that they weren't in place. The killer drove up on the sidewalk, which is something nobody in the government had anticipated that someone would do. And to quote a higher, Ann Kirkpatrick went on to say that if the bollards had been in place, they would have prevented ambulances and first responders, which she doesn't realize that makes everyone in the New Orleans government look even worse, that you installed something that would have actually prevented. But that doesn't matter because she's just blowing smoke, hoping that it'll get passed so she doesn't end up like the lady up at Harvard, get fired when everyone realizes she's an obviously talentless quota hire. Either way, it was the bollards along Bourbon Street were either a government project designed primarily to line the pockets of those people who were collecting the money, while making it seem like they could make it so no one could attack Bourbon Street. But that's not possible. You can't make it so no one can attack Bourbon Street. That's not possible. You got to make it so that people won't. But there's no money in making it so people won't, because that just involves punishing criminals and terrorists. And there's no money in that, so that's not what's happening down in New Orleans. Talentless, mindless, vacuous quota hire Ann Kirkpatrick said, "This person was determined." She said that accidentally admitting the truth and her complete and utter helplessness. By the way, Ann Kirkpatrick, the quota hire there in New Orleans, who's the superintendent of police, believe it or not, she also holds a position with the FBI Law Enforcement Executive Association with their leadership training program, where she instructs FBI officials on bias and diversity, emotional intelligence, and leading generations, whatever that means. So you have to go attend the lecture to even figure out what that means. And that's her position. In addition to being a quota hire superintendent of police, a showpiece down there in New Orleans. But hey, bottom line, the massacre on Bourbon Street at 3:00 in the morning should be a cautionary tale, right? Because nobody wants to go from wasted out of your mind at 3:00 in the morning, staggering down Bourbon Street, to facing judgment at the hands of the living God. That's not how you want to go, kids. So don't participate in any of that going on down there on Bourbon Street. That's our advice for the week here at the Weekly Worldview. And should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.